Welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soups. Time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe. Please rate and review the program. I'm your host, Wim Liu, joined once again by producer co-host Amit Mann. We are going to talk about the Raptors' latest loss to the Detroit Pistons. Afterwards, we will call Garrett Temple on the line. It'll be interesting to talk to Garrett. Friend of the program. This will be his third appearance already on the season. So shouts to Garrett Temple.
And more to come.
We'll see if he has more Raptors games than Raptors show appearances. That'll be a game that we will play later today. And then an hour or two, I really wanted to pivot towards talking about Canada basketball a little bit as well. And the for me, at least, two of the younger reporters who have really, really tapped in to what's happening at the grassroots level in Canada basketball all the way up to the very top are Oren Weisfeld and Levan Osman, friends of the program. We call them the off-strip boys because when they went to Vegas Summer League, they shared a room, and it was off the strip. And they had Olive Garden, and they... In any case, we call them the off-strip boys for that exact reason.
I did that, too, last year.
Yeah? Did you also stay off-strip?
Yeah, it's cheaper.
I mean, I know it's cheaper, but...
Yeah, and I had a really nice place, actually. It was a bachelor pad, had a kitchen, had some frying pans for me.
Okay.
Everything I needed. Right. And then, yeah, I made a few long walks to the strip.
You walked to the strip?
I walked, bro.
Because it's 40 degrees.
I've never been there.
It's 40 degrees.
Yeah. I saw people like pouring water on their heads.
Celsius. Not Fahrenheit.
No, it was very, very hot. There's no jokes about that.
Yeah.
It was, I didn't hear that drop. I'm sorry. Sorry, Derek.
You really about business.
I am about that business. Yeah. I'll make the walk. When you're discovering a new city, I've never been there before. I don't think it's a bad thing to,
walk around.
Long walk. It was long.
Generally, I like doing that.
Yeah.
But Vegas, when it's that hot,
I got some tacos there. Yeah. I heard about them. What was the place called? Taco de Gallo or something like that.
Mm.
Walked in. It was like the humidity. It just punched me in the face.
Oh, yeah.
But the place was packed with people.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that was a fun day.
You know what was not fun? What? Raptors Pistons. last night, let's paint the scene. So yesterday in Toronto, not quite 40 degrees, but
it was beautiful.
A very beautiful 20 degrees in Toronto. Very rare occurrence in mid-March. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's very, very just warm weather all winter. But it was 20 degrees. Everybody's out. I saw so many people in shorts. I was near Hyde Park. The amount of people in shorts. And rightfully so. The sun's out. It's like everybody getting to enjoy their time. And I was out there enjoying my time as well. And then I realized, time's up. Go home. 7 o'clock. Raptors, Pistons. And, Raptors lost again, 113-104. You once again continue to see a lineup that doesn't have most of their key players, obviously due to injuries or other absences. Raptors did lead for a while there. But unfortunately, second half, they kind of fall apart. Amit, what was your overall impression of watching this masterpiece, this glorious matchup?
Starting with overall, things started to go wrong for them in the latter part of the second quarter. Talking defensively, the Pistons in the third quarter, they outscored them by a lot. But we saw kind of everything, which was sort of, it was foreshadowing what we're going to see in the third quarter. It was Cade making a lot of shots. The rebounding was a huge problem. The Raptors, they were out-rebounded 15-7 in the third quarter. Mm. And the Pistons shot 17 free throws in that third quarter. And that's how they weren't shooting very well, but they're getting to the free throw line. It was a lot of rebounding issues, gang rebounding. There was a possession where someone was shooting a free throw. I'm not sure who it was on the Pistons, but it was four Raptors versus two Pistons.
Yeah, and Jalen Duren got it. I know exactly what you're talking about. He got right there for the putback.
Oh, boy. But even the people that were out there for that,
yeah,
I don't even blame them. There were some mismatches, right? They're a pretty big team, and Jalen Duren is a problem.
Dude,
very, very good player.
I had to look it up because here's the thing. This is where the Raptors season is at. So for a very long time in my career, I wrote 10 things on every Raptors game.
100%.
And it was regardless. And I would always post it. It was always 10. It was shorter, and then it got longer. And then it used to just be a screen cap that I would put on social, and now it's become like an article.
Mm-hmm.
Last season, I was like, oh, man, a lot of these games don't deserve 10. So a lot of them I pivoted to writing 5 things, especially after losses that were very consistent, just 5 things.
Yeah.
Yesterday, when you and I were sitting and preparing for the show, we sit near the assignment desk, for the writers at Sportsnet. And Gary Mello came over and is like, "Well, I hate to do this to you, man, but our man Grange is going to be flying out of Detroit. I guess, will you be able to write about this game?" And I was like, "You know what, Gary, for you, man, of course. You know, I got you. You know, I wasn't planning to write about this game,
yeah,
but I got you, you know?" And I told him, I was like, "But it's probably going to be five, though."
Hard.
You know what I mean? And then last night after the game, after the React Pod, after I sat down, thought about it, wrote down four items, and then I got to the fifth item and I was like, "You know what? This is going to be a new history. It's going to be four things tonight." Anyway, my number one thing is exactly what you talk about, which was the size issue.
Yeah.
Raptors across the board were just so much smaller than the other team. It was the same issue that took place in the previous games as well. I thought, obviously, Denver is a pretty big team. The way Portland was playing that night, they also had a lot of size mismatches. And then you play against Detroit. And you can say whatever you want about the Pistons, but they still started 2 7-footers.
Yep.
Jalen Duren, right, who had 23 rebounds and 24 points. The Raptors don't even have a center in their starting lineup, right? Kelly is a power forward.
Yep.
Who's in his 11th season at age 32. Can't really jump.
Yeah.
Right? Not necessarily a physical player. He can do a lot of things offensively, but defensively not a center. And then you're surrounding him with four guards.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Bruce Brown, Emmanuel Quickley, Ochai Agbaji, Grady Dick, they're all guards. Grady is the tallest out of the bunch, but again, there's only so much you can ask, you know, a skinny rookie to do
for
you defensively on that front. So you're going to get mismatches. And then the point about Duren, and I was writing this yesterday, I was like, man, Duren's really young, but he's like, but he looks like that already, and he's playing like that already. And I looked it up. He's like, I think about 10 days younger than Grady. Hmm. He's younger than everybody that took the floor for the Raptors last night. Jalen Duren.
Yeah. No, that's true.
And he looked like a man among boys yesterday. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what you learn when you read four things. That's what the Raptors are at these days. They make me write four, now 10.
Wish you had the animation where you could just like scratch out the five and put four.
That's what I did on WordPress. I hit backspace on five and I put four.
Kelly's going to be starting center for Canada this offseason, right?
Yeah, well, that's something I will be talking about in hour two, because size will be a major issue for the Canadians as well. And it's usually been their Achilles heel in previous tournaments until last year at the World Cup. But
they have different personnel, though. They got Dylan. They got Lou Dort, who plays extremely big. So you have personnel
Shea's
around.
Shea's quite athletic. Yep.
Yeah, so you have people around him that can kind of offset some of the deficiencies that he can come up, right? Like a stretch five is amazing to have, especially in FIBA. But rebounding will be a problem for Canada, and it's a problem for the Raptors at this very second.
So how do you solve this? Like, is there anything that Darko can do, at least within games, to try to, like, at least not be completely overwhelmed?
It's tough, man. Asking, like, it's not as if they have people that are, like, that much bigger, right? So you're like, are you asking Bruce Brown? Are you asking Grady Dick, Jordan Nwora, Jalen McDaniels? He's had a couple of really strong rebounding games, but in the end, like, you're still down like 30 pounds against some of these guys, and you're still down like 4 or 5 inches. You can try your best. Like, there was a possession a few games ago where it was against Denver, where I actually loved that JFL. He was boxing out Michael Porter Jr., and like Porter Jr. was like towering over him, but he was trying so hard to box the man out. Now, Porter got the rebound, and JFL, he slapped it out of his hands, and they went down the other side of the court. But that's kind of what you're hoping for, is that you just want them to try as hard as they can and be aware, too. And being aware on the defensive end has also been a problem for the Raptors. It was an issue last night. Back cuts, you know, just knowing where your man is off ball, avoiding some of those cuts towards the rim. That was an issue for the Raptors, and it kind of just kept on persisting. And some of the lineups that they used late third quarter, early fourth quarter, I mean, these aren't lineups that are going to help you win games, right? You have a lot of players that are very inexperienced in these situations.
They're trying to win the lottery with some of these lineups.
Well, and so I think that's a byproduct.
Just say win your Gagne after this.
Gagne. But there were some good things, right? I mean, like, I loved how IQ played. I loved how Jonte played, obviously. There were some good things that we're seeing from those players specifically last night. Kelly had a good game. Obviously, I mean, I mentioned it yesterday too, like the Pistons, they have the guys that they're trying to go forward with, and they're playing. And the Raptors right now, I mean, Gary's not playing, Scottie's not there, RG's not playing, like a lot of guys that weren't there.
The one guy out there that was playing that I think is still, for me at least, like really worthwhile to tune in to watch this player's growth is Emmanuel Quickley.
Yeah.
And Quickley last night finished with 25 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists, 8 of 19 shooting. So maybe a little bit less efficient than he has been. But to be honest, for me, it was just he missed a couple of threes and didn't get a couple of calls, whatever. What I liked about Quickley's game, and it's been something that, especially because we've gotten to see like about 3 months of Quickley now as a Raptor since the trade with New York, is when he first got to Toronto, it was like, okay, he can shoot, he can handle. And he was already playmaking at that time, doing a good job of setting up the offense. But you saw it was a strange thing, but he just wasn't finishing or even going to the paint that often.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Settled for a lot of floaters, which he obviously can hit. He's a really good shooter of the floater, but wasn't going through the paint as much, getting all the way to the basket as much. Last night, I love the fact that Quickley made sure to get mismatches, to attack mismatches, and whether it was Duren, whether it was Stewart, whether it was Wiseman, whoever, he was making sure to get mismatches onto Detroit's many big men. And then even though he's small and those guys are seven-footers who are still young and pretty athletic, he was getting by them and making plays at the rim. And I think that, you know, you have to look at these small little developments when you're looking at these kind of games. And for me, it has been very important for me to see Quickley get better at finishing through contact and around bigs in the paint. What did you see from Emmanuel Quickley last night?
Loved his game. I mean, aside from the shooting, but 8 of 19, like, that could be, you know, 11 of 19 on a different day, right? He shot 2 of 8 from 3, but I like the shots he was shooting. Mm-hmm. And other than that, man, his IQ in the pick and roll, he's getting so much better at it. Like, he's becoming a lot more cerebral when it comes to his ball handling. Like, it's not as predictable as it once was. Like, he's using his stutter dribbles. He's not afraid to, you know, hold on to a little bit longer. He's maintaining his dribble.
Yep.
He's surveying, he's making new decisions on the fly. And like, it helps having, you know, someone like Kelly who can pick and pop a little bit. He found him a few times, but there's also a few like really nice bounce passes under the rim to a few players. And these are like, again, really positive signs for him. And also for the Raptors, like, I mean, I think in the third quarter, things went sour, especially with their defense. But at the same time, they stopped playing through their bigs.
Mm-hmm.
And offensive toughness, I think, is something that this team has to figure out. And it's something that a lot of inexperienced teams, they struggle with. And Darko talked about this last night. We're going to go to a clip in a second. But it's like having that force and the experience to know where you got to go at certain points. What kind of possession do you need? Are you taking the temperature of the game? And Darko talked about that last night. I think it was an interesting clip that we should play right now, if we could.
Yeah, producers are going to work on that clip.
Yeah.
But your point was that offensive toughness and executing at the right times and what to do at certain moments.
And understanding momentum, right? Knowing momentum. Like, when you're on the road, you have to be able to control the crowd, control the game as best you can. And that's not easy, right? But when a team is going on like a 10-0 run, you got to be able to slow it down, say, okay, maybe we don't press right here. Let's pull it out. Let's go with a play that we know, a set that we trust that won't cause a turnover. And stuff like that, that I'm hoping the Raptors kind of gain experience in.
Okay, so here's Darko on that exact point.
In Detroit, they wanted to start the game really well. They had a chance to see the way we opened the game against Denver. It's definitely a learning opportunity for us, and that's something that we need to address, how we're starting the games. But also, I talked to the team about getting the feel when the game, momentum of the game. Like, we cannot make a turnover now. This is the moment we gotta really rebound. Like, the moments that changed the really rhythm of the game. So that was a big message for us. I thought that we had really good stretches of basketball. We just gotta extend 20 minutes of really good basketball to 25, to 28, to 30, to 35.
Yeah. So to that point, what is that like safety go-to play that they should be looking to right now for some stability?
I think it is playing through their bigs with Kelly and Jonte. It promotes player movement. Like, when you get hesitant, when you're feeling unsure about yourself, you tend to just stop moving, right? And that's not good for this Raptors offense, especially with how limited they are.
That's the only way this offense scores, let's be honest.
Yeah. And so if they get it to their big and they start, you know, doing some off-ball cuts, and like, they have a lot of success. Like, we saw it against Denver. And granted, you had RJ Barrett for that game, and he's one of the best at it on this team.
Yep.
But if you get the ball moving, if you get the players moving, and it also, like, you have two bigs who can shoot the ball. Now, you don't want them shooting it every single possession, but at the very least, I'll probably say that they'll get a decent shot out of it, even if it kind of breaks down. You're going to get a good shot out of that possession, and you're probably not going to turn it over.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's probably the way they have to go, and that's on IQ, that's on Darko, that's on Kelly, that's on everyone, right?
Here's the thing. I would say that, to me, that's not necessarily on IQ and Kelly, because when they're on the floor, at least the Raptors still have structure offensively.
Yeah.
when they come off the floor, and a lot of times they are both coming off the floor to, in roughly the same moments because they're both starting. That's, to me, when the offense died last night. It was like fourth quarter. Okay, it's Jontay Porter who is doing his very best to be the traffic cop, as you mentioned, at the top of the floor there, holding the ball in the post, letting other guys cut. But then it's McDaniels getting shots. It's Jamias Ramsey last night getting shots.
Yeah.
It's Jordan Wara last night getting shots. And I haven't really liked what he's done off the ball. He's probably done better on the ball, but, like, that's not the system. You're not going to be given the ball that much.
Sure.
You need to be able to cut and find your ways around it. When those guys started going really cold, and then Bruce Brown joined the mix, I think, at certain points too, that, to me, didn't work. And, of course, when Kelly and IQ came back in, they had maybe more of a chance to sort of steady it and improve it. But, nevertheless, the momentum was already lost. So, for me, I agree with you. Like, I do think that getting into the post is the most important thing. But it's just, like, unless they play quickly more than what he's already doing, which, by the way, since Scotty has gone down, quickly's averaged 38 minutes per game.
Yeah.
Your offense is going to die at some point. And I think for the second unit, when we did see for a brief stretch there, when the second unit was playing really well, Kelly was playing in that second unit and with Scotty. So you can have structure. Mm-hmm. Right now, like, the most structure they had was Jontay trying to be responsible and the rest of those guys, like a McDaniels, ISOing, calling their own number, and it's like, you're done if you do that. You're absolutely done.
Yeah.
I would like to never see that again. I can't stress that enough, even in losses.
Jamias Ramsey, he had a very nice windmill, right? That was his lone dunk.
Okay, hold on. I wanted your thoughts on this too, because with Ramsey, I liked that he was giving a lot of energy on defense.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that.
Made mistakes, but yes, for sure.
Yeah,
he was trying.
He was trying hard on defense, which honestly, for a 10-day, like, absolutely you need to do that, right? He missed some open threes. He missed some open layups. Whatever. It happens. You know, it's not the worst thing in the world. The windmill down 10. Like, am I being a hater, being like, just dunk the ball regularly?
Yeah, it's risky. Okay? It's very risky.
Yeah.
Probably as a coach.
Because I feel like a hater as I say it. But
yeah,
I'm also at the same, I'm like, just get the two. And he did get the two.
He did, right? Yeah. And if he missed it, like, it's a different conversation, right? Like, now he's on Shaq and the Fool, things like that, right? But he made it, and I like that he had the confidence to do it, and I'm happy it worked out for
him. Dude, it was the highlight of the night.
Yeah, it actually was.
Yeah. When I think back on Raptors Pistons many years from now, I'll be like, remember when Jamias Ramsey, wearing 37, did a windmill dunk down 10?
It was nice, too. Very smooth, like, good extension.
Very good.
Very, very nice. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't hate it if he didn't do it. It's not something you just want to do. Like, it's not a typical play for someone in his position. Yeah, it would have been really, really bad.
Yeah.
But he made it.
Yeah, he did.
And he also had 7 rebounds. Like, he was hustling. He tried.
Totally.
And we're talking about the minutes when IQ wasn't on the floor. Like, Jamias, he played 19 minutes. That's a lot. He was a minus 10. Bruce Brown was a minus 16. So you're right. When IQ is on the floor, when Kelly's on the floor, like, obviously it looks much, much better. And
yeah, for sure.
they were much more productive in their minutes. But when they go to the bench, it got a little bit worse. But Jontay Porter was pretty good.
Jontay was great, man.
He was hustling. He had a lot of off-ball blocks, off-ball steals. And those are, like, signs of a player who's just, like, kind of locked in.
He's in the right positions.
Exactly.
That's the only way you're going to get those. Yeah.
And he was even switching on to some guards, right? And he's blocking the ball. Like, this is good stuff for someone, especially in his position. Oche wasn't – not a great game for Oche. Not a great game.
Yeah, I think there's a conversation we have with Oche, because I think to the point about Jontay, like, the fact that the whole game, the whole second unit was unserious.
Yeah.
But what Jontay was still trying to do the right thing and still didn't force a shot. Like, by far, he outplayed everybody on the bench that came off the bench for Toronto. But he didn't force a shot. He didn't try to, like, it's my turn to, like, it's not McDaniels driving the lane one-on-one and putting it behind his back, then losing the ball and then tapping, my bad.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah,
that's a new drinking game, watching the Raptors. Count how many times Jalen McDaniels taps his chest and says, my bad. Right?
Right.
Like, I would love to, that's one way to enjoy the Raptors Pistons.
Hand up.
Yeah, you
and that, guys.
Yeah. But in any case, with Jontay, he's done a really good job being responsible. Ochai, to me, it's not notable that the Raptors and Darko has definitely been brought in to be a developmental coach, and yet with Ochai, it feels like down the stretch, he's the guy getting pulled.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's not against Darko. I think it's because Ochai is giving them very little. So last night, you saw the Raptors actually close with two centers, and Ochai was the one who came out the floor with the starters. I mean, 0-3 in 26 minutes, made the unselfish pass a couple times in transition, but defensively, He did okay, did good, let's say, even, right? But offensively, he did like less than zero.
Yeah.
And I think that's still a little bit of a concern for me. What are you noticing for Ochai? Like, what's missing with Ochai that he can't make an impact offensively?
Well, the offense is one thing. Like, I think he's going to be a role player within the system. We know that.
Yeah,
he has to
sure.
hit shots. He has to make smart cuts. And that's kind of that's going
to
be
finish,
what he
finish, most importantly.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
100%. The defensive end is kind of where my, I'm not sure, but because they kind of want to make him a bit of a defensive stopper, right? And he's very mobile laterally. He can get around screens pretty well. But what's concerning about last night is that Cade was posting him up.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and they're similar height, similar weights. And
Cade is bigger than him.
Huh?
Cade is bigger than Ochai.
6'6", 220, 6'5", 215. There's one. We're talking 1 inch here.
Cade's a little taller. Like you could definitely see over the top. You could shoot over the top.
But it's 1 inch, right? 1 inch.
I don't know. I feel like when you stand them side by side, they might not. There's clearly the one guy's taller.
Maybe he is, right?
Yeah.
So he's brought in to be a defensive stopper, a version of that along the perimeter.
Okay.
I think it's concerning that in a matchup like that, now granted, OG Anunoby has had problems with Cade Cunningham. Like, he's a very shifty guard. He's extremely talented.
He cooked OG once in Toronto when he was a rookie.
I remember, man. Yeah. Like, he's very, very good.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he was so mismatched against Cade. And if he's going to be in this position to be a player that is going to be put on the best person on the other team, right? And that's kind of what his role is going to be. Because if it's not, then I'm not sure where he fits. But if he's not that person, then, and also offensively, there's limitations. He can finish in transition sometimes. That's good. Around the rim is still a little bit suspect, but corner threes are good. Mm-hmm. Above the break, not so much. It's like, I'm kind of figuring out, like, where does Ochai fit in the future? Because that's kind of what we're doing right now with
I think Darko's trying to figure out the same thing, too. That's why you see his minutes be more inconsistent. Even though for the other guys, you know, they're getting the time. But, yeah, for Ochai, like, what's concerning is when you have less responsibilities on offense and all you're basically asked to do is finish rather than create, that should lead to you getting more efficient.
Yeah.
And he only took 3 shots last night. But still, like, I don't feel that way. Like, when he's cutting and stuff, I don't feel like he's taking the right moments to try and finish. For me, he takes off from too far out. He's, like, trying to get there with speed and athleticism and bursting to the basket rather than, like, trusting that he can take one more dribble and, like, finish strong at the hoop. Now, when he's dunking, he's dunked and he's finished. But generally speaking, on layups, he's missed a couple of those. I think part of it is just the adjustment period. You know, there's been so much change in the whole system. And I feel like for the players who like Ochai, who can't get their own offense as much, it's even harder for them to continue to sort of thrive in this sort of system. I mean, having said that, though, yeah, I mean, this is a big opportunity for him, and I don't think he's really taking it. And so it's showing you some of the limitations in his game. But defensively, it's interesting because when he's a stopper, he's like, he's like 6'4", right? He's not like physically overwhelmed. He's cut, right? But he's like, he's a guard. What are some, like, similar maybe body types that you see around the league of, like, really good stoppers that are, like, kind of, like, shaped and sized like Ochai? You know what I mean? Because, like, with OG, it was like, okay, he's a defensive stopper because he's that big, that strong, that big of a wingspan.
Yeah.
And he's also, like, moves his feet really well. And he's committed to that front.
Sure.
What are some comps for Ochai to sort of reach for? Like, are you...
Well,
like a Caruso? Like,
I was about to say. So I looked up how much Alex Caruso weighs. Mm-hmm. He's 186 pounds. But you would never know it.
No, he's not. These are not accurate, man.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at Basketball Reference.
No, it's not you. It's
going for that.
No, there's no way.
But the point is that they're very similar height, very similar body build.
Really
right?
Cut, too. By the way, if you see Caruso up close, he's... Yeah. He's very cut.
I haven't been that close before.
Well...
Not to him, at least.
You got it.
I'll take your word for it. However, right? Point being... Similar kind of statures, right? You're able to put Alex Caruso on damn near anyone.
Exactly.
Why is that?
Yeah.
Right? And so it's a center of gravity. It's experience. I think he's very poised. He's very balanced. Mm-hmm. And maybe, like, someone can be in good shape, but it doesn't mean that they have great balance.
Mm.
Right? I think they're very different things.
Okay,
you can have huge arms, but maybe your core, your strength may not be exactly where it needs to be.
Sure.
That's a curiosity for me. Grady mentioned that during his conditioning stint, one of the things they worked on was his core and being more balanced on his shots. And obviously it's paid off. I wonder if something like that I'm spitballing here because you see, like, he's obviously a very athletic dude.
Mm-hmm.
But why is it that in some of these matchups against players that he should be able to compete with, why is he getting blown by? Why is he getting posted up and teams are successful against him? It's something that they have to be curious about. I'm curious, too. how this all goes for Oche, because again, like you said, it's a very big moment for him, kind of career defining, because he's not that young, right? You have a window here to make the most of it, and he's getting
like
the minutes.
Ochai's born in the same month as RJ.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But second team now too. So again, you get more curious. And I believe when we had someone on from Utah Jazz, the beat, they had said they didn't want to get rid of Oche, right? They didn't want to include him in the trade, but they felt like they had to. And it's interesting actually that.
I mean, who didn't want to get rid of him? They didn't need to get rid of him. They clearly were willing to get rid of him.
True.
Yeah.
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 Devin Booker was on JDRX podcast last night. Yeah. Well, at least it was released. Right. And he had mentioned that like early on in his career, he had a phase of his son's season where he was able to go out there and make mistakes and he didn't have to worry about being pulled out. Right. And he's like, that is a dream for a young player.
Okay.
And a lot of these guys are having that opportunity right in front of them. Now it's cool that they're getting it. It's cool that they're a little bit, they're making the most of it in some, to some degree, but you can't take this opportunity for granted because it doesn't come along all the time. Usually when you make mistakes, you get pulled.
Sure.
And usually when you're not doing things on offense, you're not focused, you're not following the game plan, usually that means that you're out.
Yeah.
They're able to play through these mistakes. And for Oche, for a lot of these guys, like you gotta find a way to get to that level of focus and intensity and fire.
Yeah.
Every single minute you're on the court. There's just too many guys right now that are vying for these minutes on the team. And like we saw, like JFL, I love him, but he didn't play last night.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Jamias Ramsey got those minutes, and maybe you can say they want to get a look at him. But also, if JFL was doing his part, maybe he would have got those minutes.
Right. Yeah. So, for sure. I mean, the reality of the situation is half these guys won't even be on an NBA roster next year that we saw in the game last night.
Yeah, and they're defining that
on both ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. So on both sides for Toronto and Detroit. So yeah, as you mentioned, these are very key opportunities. I think Ochai will be though. I think it's just he's not a guy who creates for himself, and the Raptors' offense ain't creating that much right now. Mm-hmm. So. It's difficult, but he's got to learn and adapt and grow. And that's one of the things is like very few players in Darko's offense is just there to be like spoon fed.
Yeah.
You have to be able to do multiple things. And so that's up to him to grow and develop as well. But Raptors lose last night. This will be the last time we talk about this game. And speaking of how to stick on an NBA roster, we'll talk about that on the other side of this break when we bring in Garrett Temple. I can't wait. But we're going to take that break. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, William Liu. Join me on the program, and if everything goes well, I think we're going to have him every week. Raptors veteran Garrett Temple, already your third time on the program. Garrett, I appreciate you taking the time, man.
No problem, Will. It's great to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I feel like, first off, I feel very relieved that you're not wearing the suit, man. Because I look down at myself and I'm like, I'm just in a hoodie right now. It's a little OVO hoodie. You know, it's fine. But if you had the suit on, this would be a mismatch. That's all I'm saying.
Now, we both got the hoodies on. You know what I'm saying? I got my Raps hoodie on. You know, you got your OVO. We matching today.
Yeah, exactly. No, we got one of these. I want you to put on the suit for the interview. And I'm going to do the same. And we'll make it look super formal. Anyway, so one thing I wanted to talk to you about, just starting with the team right now, is you know, the Raptors, I don't know if you've been part of a season like this where it's like four teams in one. You know what I mean? The starting off, like you guys had the original starting five and you guys were trying to compete, didn't really work out. Then OG gets traded as another team now with Quickly and RJ with the rest of the group with Scotty and Pascal leading the way. Then Pascal gets moved. Now it's a new group. And now you have this instance where a lot of injuries are happening and you're seeing a lot of young guys come in. So have you ever been a part of a season like this where you're basically like four teams in one?
No, I haven't. This is definitely the first time I've ever been a part of, as you said, this many different lineups, this many different, sets of players that are playing, this many different rotations. This is new to me. And it's a great learning experience. I'm glad I'm able to be a part of it. You look at guys like Grady, in his rookie year, to be able to understand and see this early on will make him, you know, I think it'll just allow him to be able to transition throughout his career a lot easier. So it's been interesting, but, you know, we're making the best of it.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too, because with Darko, he's used a phrase like, we're kind of treating this like a training camp, and he's said it a couple of times. So I've been wondering for you guys in practices, like, how would you compare maybe practices at the start of the season versus, like, I guess, you know, especially later on in the year, practices get less and less anyway, but what practices are like now with a lot of new guys who are like very, very new to the whole city and the organization?
Yeah, it's as if we, you know, the NBA is pretty simple in terms of a lot of people do the same things. So getting in guys like Quick and RJ early on, just have to talk about terminology, and then getting Bruce and Jordan in, again, you're talking about, you know, different terminologies, and then getting Kelly in and Ochai, kind of the same thing. But we actually kind of switched, we changed our defensive concepts and our language. So that was a whole new thing. And then obviously having guys like Jamias and obviously Jonte coming back, it's a whole different defense than when he was really playing at the beginning earlier in the year. And Javon the same way. So we're definitely treating it like training camp. And we still, at the end of the day, we have a young team.
Yeah.
So you're going to be teaching and learning throughout the entire season. And that's where we're definitely doing that, except to, I guess, a higher extent because of all of the change we've had.
All right. So it's really interesting you're talking about this new defense. What are the broad differences, and also when did this change come in?
You know, we're weakening and stronging things now. In terms of pick and roll, so our pick and roll defense, we kind of went back a little old school. We're not sending everything to the middle like we were before, and obviously teams that have watched us over the past probably 8 games are seeing that now. So this is not like insider information. So we're trying to, this is helping us protect the paint a little better, keeping things on the side of the floor. Whereas before we would send things middle and try to, you know, rely on our help defense, but teams are shooting three so much better now. So you have to find different ways. And the league is a league of, you know, things change, trends come in and they go out, you know. So that's the biggest thing, utilizing our help, our low man a little more, and making sure we keep guys out of the paint, especially without having Yak.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know, with having a rim protector like Jakob, a big body in there, we need to, you know, find other ways to try to keep guys out of the paint.
Yeah.
To protect the paint. So that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, no doubt. And even with some of these strategies, you might still run into a guy like Jalen Duren, who I couldn't believe that guy's younger than Grady, man.
It's insane, man. We were talking about that on the bench. Every time I see this guy, he's like he's built like a superhero.
Yep.
And he's 20 years old. It makes no sense at all. What do you have? 24 and 24 against this? It's 25 and 24, something like that. Yeah, he's a, you know, a lot of instances, he's a man amongst boys, and he's the youngest one on the court, which is unbelievable.
I kind of felt bad for Kelly in a little bit, you know. I'm like, Kelly, I know you're 32 and you played a lot of power forward in your career. Now you got to do this.
Exactly. KO is a stretch four, you know, most of his career, but with the situation we're in, you know, he got a battle.
Yeah.
And he did a great job. You know, he had a hell of an all-around game.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, Kelly can really pass for us, can really set the tone offensively. And I will say Jonte did a great job.
Jonte's,
you know,
good.
Battling.
Yeah.
Jonte had I would say his best game last night because of everything else besides just scoring, just the way he played the game, the energy he had, the you know, his effort, his competitiveness on the defensive end and rebounding. I was really proud of what he did last night.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I think for Jonte, you know, you could tell that he is in the right positions. You know, he's not jumping out the gym like Jalen Duren, but, you know, at the same time, he's in the right position. He's meeting guys. His energy was great. Darko complimented all the deflections that he got. You know, I think one of the topics of conversation coming out of that game like that was, like, you know, the Raptors have a lot of guys who you may be able to relate to based on sort of your path to the league, right? Like coming in, you've been, and this is a crazy stat that I only saw this morning, but you've been on 8 different 10-day contracts in your career when you were starting out. That's got to be a league record first off, all right? That's like a CBA labor violation, quite frankly.
I think it is a record.
Yeah.
I think it is the record.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and you've joined different teams midway through the season. You've had to really adapt, been on, you know, league minimum contracts, maybe unguaranteed contracts at certain points too, where you don't know your future. So I think that's similar to a lot of guys on the Raptors right now. And I guess my question is, like, what was it for you that allowed you to stick, not just on the court, but maybe off the court? And how does somebody in that kind of position, like, make an impression on a team and ultimately carve out a long-term career that I'm sure they're all hoping to do?
No question. That's a great question, Will. You know, and that's one reason why I'm happy I'm in the spot I'm in, because mm-hmm. of guys like DJ, because of obviously guys like Jamias, guys like Javon, who just got, you know, his first standard deal, Jonte. Just being able to pour into these guys and explain to them on the court, what you need to do is be the best version of yourself, not try to be anything different. They brought you in because they liked your game. So don't come in, if you're a defender that, you know, gets downhill, don't come in trying to shoot threes, you know, and lack on defense. So just be yourself. They brought you in because of who you are. And then be very low maintenance. So don't be, you know, a bad locker room guy. Mm-hmm. Don't be a guy that complains a lot. Don't be a guy that, you know, if you have a, just being honest, if you have a kind of a nagging little injury.
Yeah, you got to play through those.
You got to play through it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Unless it's crazy, you got to play through it. Now, if it's a bad ankle sprain like DJ had, obviously mm-hmm. that's different. But just understanding the opportunity you have and how a lot of them don't come around mm-hmm. for guys like us that were undrafted and things of that nature. So just being grateful for the situation you're in. Not complaining about playing time mm-hmm. when the coach does put you in, whether it's for a minute, you know, 38 seconds, 22 minutes, whatever it is, play as if your career depends on it, because it actually does. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, mentally just play free.
Right.
You know, you, Jamias, 10-day contract. You know, I told DJ this when he was on his 10-day, just play free. Don't think about making mistakes. You're going to make them regardless. So just play your game, play free. Mm-hmm. And that's when you're probably going to play to your best ability.
Yeah.
And then mentally, just if it's not for you, if this team is not the team you're supposed to be on, remember, you're not playing just for this team. There's 29 other teams looking at you.
Right.
And that could sign you. You mm-hmm. know, I had one season where I was on 3 different NBA teams my rookie year.
Yeah.
Because my rookie year, I was with the Rockets, and then I left the Rockets. And I played with the Sacramento Kings 2 days later in Houston. And then okay. I left Sacramento after the 10-day, and I played with the Spurs. So,
yeah,
you know,
right.
against Sacramento. So that's, everybody's looking, everybody's watching. And when you're on a 10-day contract, it's not just the Raptors that are paying attention to you.
Mm.
It's the whole entire league.
Do you remember what your first big break was? Like the first time you were like, oh, this happened, now I got some peace of mind. Because, you know, the way you're describing it, like, you're grinding and you have no idea what's going to happen next.
No clue. Lucky for me, I didn't have a, you know, I had a girl my rookie year, but I didn't have, obviously, anybody to take mm-hmm. care of. My first big break, I went to training camp with Miami, and they really liked me. This was right after they won the first championship.
Okay.
But they decided to go with somebody that was on the team the year before. So after about 9 games in the D League, then the Washington Wizards called me up for a workout. I worked out really well, but they decided not to take me. Then 6 days later, they called me and told me they wanted me to sign with them. But I had, you know, my agent had talked to Miami and told them, we kind of will give you first right of refusal.
Right.
And so Miami said, well, we want you. We, you know, we picked the wrong guy. We wish we had picked you.
Mm.
And I kind of had already gave Washington my, you know, they called and said, do you want the non-guaranteed contract? I said, yeah, for sure. I'm not on the NBA team.
Yeah.
Then the next day we reached out to Miami just to let them know. And they were like, oh, no, we want you. So I had to choose between
okay.
the defending champion Miami Heat
yep.
or a 3-22 Washington Wizards team.
Damn.
And, you know, I went with my gut and knew that, you know, even though Spo called me, Dave Fizdale called me, mm-hmm. they tried to recruit me. I went with my gut and went to the Wizards because of the fact that I was going to have a chance to play.
Yeah.
And I played. I was on a non-guaranteed deal. Mm-hmm. It was early December, late December. I was on a non-guaranteed deal for about 20 days. And the guaranteed date hit, and I made the roster. The first big break was actually the second game of that deal when I played against the Orlando Magic. I was the backup point guard. Mm-hmm. And Jameer Nelson was playing really, like, was had, like, 14 points against our starting point guard. So they put me in a game to defend him. I played really well, and I started the second half.
Oh.
And then I started the rest of the games.
Damn.
And they decided to keep me and release the guard that was ahead of me.
Right.
So that was the first big break, and I signed guaranteed deals since then.
Did you do anything to celebrate that? Was there, like...
I didn't. It was just, you know, I made that team, and then the next summer I signed a 1-year deal with DC, and I was just excited, man. I was ecstatic. Yeah.
I was looking at the Basketball Reference page today, and first off, do players check their own Basketball Reference page? Like, is that a thing? Have you ever opened up Basketball Reference and looked at your own resume?
Yeah, I have. We definitely check Basketball Reference because it's just so simple. Like,
it is.
If we're looking up guys' stats, if we want to, like, having a debate about who's better or what they do this. That guy averaged this. When did he average 18 a game? He never averaged 18. Look, yeah. Basketball Reference. It's very simple.
Okay.
You can see his playoff stats, all of that stuff.
Because, you know, that's what we in the media do.
We're fans just like y'all.
Yeah.
We're fans just like y'all.
Damn, I didn't know that. Okay. I was opening up Basketball Reference page, and I realized, like, I had completely forgotten about this, but you were part of that Wizards team that swept the Raptors back in 2015.
Yep.
Yeah.
When I remember Lou Will, that was the year Lou was there.
Yeah,
the Raptors used to run basically this Allen Iverson loop play for Lou to get down to his left hand all the time.
Always the left hand.
We just trapped it. We just ran our big man. We ran Nene out there to trap him before he even caught the ball.
Yeah.
And Coach Case never switched up. He kept trying to run it with Lou in the game. So I saw Coach Case last night. But yeah, 4-0. We had a lot of great first round. The year before we had a first round, we beat the Bulls 4-1, I think, when Jimmy and Nene got into it.
But
we had a great some great first round games, you know. But second round, we couldn't get past Atlanta.
Right.
I want to say both times. Atlanta both times.
Right. You were also there when – what was the one where John Wall jumped on the table? After game 6?
No.
Was that John Wall?
I wasn't there.
No? Okay.
That was John Wall.
That was John Wall.
I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I wasn't there that then. I was there when Paul Pierce called game. But I wasn't there when John jumped on the table. That was the year after I left. And I actually, that was when they played Boston. And I actually went to, watch him play game 7 in Boston.
Got you.
Paul
Pierce, 2 years in a row, has sent the Raptors packing for a while. There's this infamous clip where Paul Pierce actually beat the Raptors. I think it was with the Nets at the time. And he was like, you know, as Paul Pierce does, he likes to talk a little trash or whatever. And he, like, took off his headband and he threw it into the crowd. And the Raptors crowd threw the headband right back at him, man. They're like, no, get out of here.
I love it. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
I love the Raptors fans, man. Shout out to the Raptors fans.
For sure,
everywhere.
Man. Yeah.
Everywhere I've been, you know, Detroit, it sounded like a home game for us.
Yeah,
man.
For sure.
So just a shout out to the Raptors fans. Mm-hmm. Canada, Toronto really, really represents everywhere we go.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to ask you, speaking of your career now, and again, I was looking at the Basketball Reference page, and I realized, I was like, you know, how many players in the league right now got more tenure than Garrett Temple right now, right? And that's a nice way of saying, that's a fancy, nice way of saying who's older than Garrett Temple in the league right now.
Right.
And for sure. I looked up the list. You are 5th in the league right now in terms of the oldest active players in the league. So I wanted to see if you can guess the 4 guys up ahead of you, and maybe even the rest of the guys in the top 10. But
just age, age-wise?
Just age-wise. Okay. Not longevity in the career.
LeBron.
Of course.
Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
PJ Tucker.
Oh, that was a tricky one. That was the one I thought you might trip up on.
No, because I played against PJ in college, and I was a redshirt freshman when he was a junior or a senior, I want to say.
Right.
His junior year. So I knew I know PJ's older than me. PJ, Kyle, Bron, Chris Paul.
Yeah. Those are the four.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Kyle, I didn't know you would get Kyle because Kyle was only older than you by like a month, you know?
But me and Kyle know each other, but we were really close. So yeah. We roomed together in high school at an All-American game.
Oh, okay.
So he's born March. His birthday is this month, I want to say.
It's around the trade deadline because it's 1 year when the Raptors were playing in Tampa. Everyone thought Kyle was going to get traded at that deadline because he was coming into the last year of his deal.
So the Tampa year, it was deadline because the deadline was back. So his birthday is March. Birthday is March.
Yeah.
Yeah. We always joke about who's older by a few months. You say the other five, though.
So the other five. Yeah. Go ahead.
Wes Matthews.
That's a deep cut, man. Shouts to Wes Matthews. Got the start last night for the Hawks.
Wes Matthews. Yeah. I saw that. Play 14.
Yeah.
I got to go with. Oh, Wes Matthews, Jeff Green.
Jeff Green, of course.
I want to say Joe Ingles.
That's a great pull. That's number 10 on this list right now. Oldest active players.
Yep. Next, I'm going to go with – I got to go with Patty Mills.
Patty Mills, not on the – I got up to 12 right now. I don't see his name up here. So.
Dang, okay. Yeah. Not Patty. Who else we got then?
If you want, I can give you some hints, but I'll give you good hints. Number nine on this list was a Raptor twice in his career, like two separate stints with the Raptors.
James Johnson.
Yeah.
James, for sure.
Yeah. And then the other one, this player is, quick math here, 26 days younger than you, and has spent basically his entire career in the Eastern Conference.
26 days younger, and he's spent his entire career. So he's born in May, June. So he's born in June. Yeah. Early June.
A great college career and also a really good NBA career as well, multiple-time All-Star. But really good college career as well.
Is he... Is he in the rotation for somebody?
Oh, yeah. He's in the rotation for sure. He's in the rotation. Sure, he's coming off the bench, but he's like a good player. He's been a good player for a long time.
I'm tripping. Hold on. No, I'm not tripping. He's been in the Eastern Conference?
Pretty much his whole career.
Is he in the East right now still?
He's in the East right now, yeah.
What position does he play?
He started off as a power forward, and as most power forwards become, they become centers.
Centers.
Yeah, he's...
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm tripping. I'm tripping. I'm big tripping. Wow.
Yeah.
Man, Al Horford.
Of course.
SEC guy.
Yeah.
Of course.
There you go.
And D Rose got to be up there too.
D Rose not on this list. I only got up to 12. It says Mike Conley. I'm here. He's
Mike
36.
Conley, I'm tripping, Mike.
And then JaVale McGee. Yeah. I wasn't expecting him to be the 12th oldest player. Shouts to JaVale, man.
Wow.
You were with
JaVale.
I don't know if you guys overlapped in Washington or not.
Yeah. No, I came after him, but JaVale's my guy for sure.
All right.
Oh, well, yeah. What about Taj?
By the way, I saw Taj was with the Pistons last night. I forgot he was on the Pistons. Yeah.
Taj is definitely a year younger, like around my age. I feel like he's the same age as me.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, no offense to Taj, but you look way younger than Taj Gibson.
Yo, when Taj got drafted, me and Taj have the same age. When Taj got drafted. Out of USC, I was like Taj
you're not 30.
Younger. I was like Taj is younger than me, but he's a junior and he's a year older than me. Though. Yeah. I don't understand. Taj has had that bald. Taj's been bald since a minute. That's my guy though.
Yeah,
no,
they can't all be blessed like you, man. You know, like the hairline is still very much intact. Garrett, this is a great time, man. I got to call and catch up with you next week as well. I'll come up with a little quiz. Maybe not just about the oldest players, but I appreciate you taking the time, man. And we'll call you again next week.
Always will. Let's do it, baby.
All right. There you go. Garrett Temple. Man, not every day you could just go play Guess Who with an NBA player, but that was fun. Shout out to Garrett Temple. And yeah, we will call him next week. Anyway, we're going to take another break. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chuck E. Spice suit. When we come back, the Off-Strip Boys.
breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wayne Malou. Big thanks to Garrett Temple for joining us on the program. And yeah, I think the plan and the hope is we just get Garrett Temple once a week and just chop it up. It was great. It felt very like a vibe, just like two of us just chatting about basketball. And I think that's sort of the goal that we would have. But it was great to get some insights, especially on the Raptors changing their defense. And that's something that I actually really wanted to discuss with my two next guests here. Lee Van Osman of the Toronto Star, Oren Weisfeld of the Guardian. What's going on? We got global superstars in the building.
Whoa, chill.
The Guardian, dog.
The Guardian, yeah.
The Guardian?
Big in the UK. Star.
Yeah?
They love me, mate. Yeah.
I don't want to hear that again.
Goodness.
That's crazy.
How did we go from Garrett Temple to this? What's going on? Do you think your combined ages are is more than Garrett Temple's age?
Oh, that's a good question. Yes.
Yeah, come on. Yeah. Don't be rude.
Yes.
Don't be rude.
Not on my
I had
soul,
to make sure because Lee Van's pretty young. So.
Whoa. I'm about to turn 25. Come on. Big age.
You're about to turn 25?
When?
Damn. April
23rd, man.
This Raptor season has really aged us.
Has. Are we having a board?
He was 18 when this season started.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Appreciate you guys for joining. You'll be here for the full hour. We're going to talk Canada basketball as well. Actually, I'll give you guys the choice. You guys want to talk Raptors defense right now, or you guys want to talk Canada basketball right now?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you want to get the Raptors out of the way?
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. Let's do that. Let's do that.
This man said, we've got to get the Raptors out of the way on the Raptor show. That's my goal every day. Okay, Raptors defense. And it was great to hear that from Garrett because, very few people have picked up on that. I know I had not picked up on the fact that the Raptors had changed their entire defense in the last 8 games or so. But the overall, the Raptors since December 1st, because the Raptors actually started the season guarding pretty decently. But it started going downhill even with the previous group, and then it just got getting worse and worse, and of course, Jakob's injury. But since December 1st, so this is like more than 3 months now, the Raptors are 29th in defensive rating. Briefly, the Detroit Pistons, or first for a long time, the Detroit Pistons were below the Raptors at 30th, and then now the Utah Jazz are at 30th. I think Detroit's 28th. In any case, the Raptors are the second-worst defensive team for the bulk of the season. So, Oren, I'll start with you. Why have the Raptors been so bad defensively?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just roster turnover. Like, at a certain point, it's really hard to have a good defense when you have new guys playing every game. And it's not just roster turnover. It's injury turnover, too, more recently. That's the biggest thing. Like, any coach who's trying to put in a system, like you said, they change it out of necessity because Poeltl got hurt. But anytime you're trying to put in a system, you want continuity. You want to have practices to improve stuff. And when a new guy is playing every day, you know, even these 10 days playing from one game to the next, it's almost impossible to have a good defense.
Right.
The other thing is with Poeltl, like, they're getting out-rebounded like crazy without Poeltl since he went down. And I know you stretch it back to December 1st, but even if you go back that far, Thad Young was the backup center.
Yeah,
and
right,
he couldn't rebound or protect the rim at the level you need. So you've either had that guy or no Poeltl. It's really hard. Cody Wiles from Raptors Republic, I just saw this tweet. He said Raptors are 2-14 without Poeltl this year and minus 60 in the rebound game last 5 games. So those are probably the two biggest reasons for right now why it's been so bad.
Lee, man, what about you?
I agree with that. Roster change. You were on here a couple of days ago just guessing the 28 players on the roster.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big, like, that's crazy.
28 is a ridiculous number. That didn't even count Christian Coloco, who I count as he was fully on the roster around the team. So that should be 29, really.
Yeah. And for me, it's like, there's an identity crisis. Like, I just don't know. Like, with Nick Nurse, you knew what to expect. This team was going to play hard. They were going to pressure the ball. Like, there was an identity there,
fake
right?
Comeback.
Yeah, fake comebacks. Yeah. Like, you knew that was happening.
40 minutes a game.
But to me, too, it's like, also just like watching them, like, whether it's guarding the pick and roll, there's always just lack of communication. You can just tell these guys haven't practiced that much together often, you know, which sucks when you obviously have so many trades and roster turnover. Also for me, too, it's just like I don't think it just started this year. I think it was like a thing that was slowly happening. And I think it starts up top. I think a lot of like the leadership with the Raptors, when you look at when we had Kawhi, when we had Kyle, when we had Danny, when we had Marc Gasol, those guys were able, in my opinion, Like when they spoke,
yeah,
everyone listened.
Yeah, you fall in line.
You follow, you listen. Yeah. But then as they went by, you had guys like Pascal, OG, and Fred. And I don't blame them for this, but in my opinion, like Pascal wasn't a vocal leader, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's not someone that's gonna like call you out defensively for your mistakes.
Right.
OG too. Like I will never imagine OG like sitting down with somebody breaking down film of like what you did wrong. Mm-hmm. He's not that type of person, in my opinion. Maybe he did, maybe he did not. Like Fred was that person, but like at times we could say like people didn't want to listen to Fred, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's totally fair.
From that point of view, it's like you think about it in that leadership aspect to where you thought maybe Pascal and OG and Fred could turn into that. It didn't happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now we moved on, right? And it's like who and you want your main players to be that vocal leader, right?
Right, yeah.
No offense to like Thad Young, mm-hmm. Garrett Temple, Dennis Schroeder. Like mm-hmm. if they're telling me something on defense, I'm not listening. Like at least from a perspective to where it's like
it doesn't hit the same as when Kyle told you to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Back in the day. Or but okay. To me, like it comes best from the top guys, right? Mm-hmm. So Dennis, I think he tried, but it's like
but bro, they just brought Dennis in. Like exactly. How was he supposed to come in and just be the vocal leader for the whole team?
Exactly.
Like that was unrealistic. That's a bad plan, even though that was the plan.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A couple of stats to throw at you here. So the Raptors' defensive rating, at least on Basketball Reference right now, is 118. That would be the highest defensive rating they've ever had. However, that's also error-adjusted, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're also in a really inflated scoring era. Again, I was going to throw this stat at Garrett Temple, but when he entered the league, it was 09-10. The NBA average, the average across the board for teams was 100 points. A team would score 100 points a game. This year, the average for a team scoring is 115. So that's already a 15% bump. Just over the last, like, 15 years. So, of course, defensive rating is going to naturally rise. So you can't necessarily compare. What you can do is compare relative defensive rating. So that's your current defensive rating versus the average defensive rating of the NBA that year, right? So back in the day, if you allowed 110 and the league average was 100, then clearly you know you're a bad defense. Nowadays, if you average 110 given up, but the average is 115 points given up, you're actually a good defense. So this is relative defense. Raptors, relative to the league differential in terms of defensive rating, it's the worst that the Raptors have been relative to the rest of the league since 2011.
Damn.
And that was like Jay Triano years. 09-10 was pretty bad. 2010-11 was pretty bad in terms of just like the Raptors really couldn't guard. And then past that, you got some expansion years in there. You just throw those out, okay? I've read Prehistoric. There's a lot of messy stuff going on. Shouts to Alex. But like, yeah, basically it hasn't been that bad since the Jay Triano era. So defensively, for me, it's like how much of this also comes from not having the personnel and also just a total shift in how the Raptors are putting together the roster in terms of they were really bringing in defensive first players and now bringing offensive first players. How much is this a front office decision as well?
Yeah, that's what I was actually going to bring up. And identity crisis is a great way of putting it. Like, I love that. Because defensively, they have an identity crisis. Offensively, they don't have that. Like, I like a lot of the stuff Darko has done offensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a ball movement coach, right?
Yeah.
And this is something I would be curious to really know Masai and Bobby's real thoughts on it.
Yeah.
Whether it was just because those were the players that were available or these were the types of players they wanted to target, the type of players they got are offense-first guys. Kelly Olynyk, R.J. Barrett, Emmanuel Quickly.
They drafted Grady.
Great point. Like, those four guys are all offense-first guys and out went these Vision 6'9 defense-first players. I think, honestly, that a lot of it had to do with the way the league is trending, and it's just like, the stats you just mentioned, the league is going to a place where in the past you had to be an elite defense to win a championship. That is no longer the case. And you still have to have a good defense to win a championship, but offense matters way more than it ever has. So I think credit to the Raptors front office for recognizing that, right? Like, they made a decision to pivot to get more offense first guys in the building. But the downfalls to that are obviously you have to figure out a way to string together an okay defense. Do I think they can do it? You mentioned like personnel. Scotty and Poeltl as a 4-5 combination is good. Like, especially Scotty turning into the rim protector he turned into this year. Like, that really helps. But to me, the biggest question, not just like on the defensive end for the Raptors, but probably the biggest question like overall for how this core of players is going to reach that next level is who is that starting 2-3 guard, like the Gary Trent Jr. position. because, you know, a lot of fans will say Grady Dick. Grady Dick next year, he gets a start, and that's your starting five. Well, between Emmanuel Quigley, Grady Dick, and RJ Barrett, it's just so many guys to attack. It's so many. It's three guys that the premier stars of today's game will look at and just be like, this is a mismatch. I can take this. I think they need to find that 3-and-D wing, that OG Anunoby type.
We need to find a Vision 6-9 type of player.
And we knew this when we traded OG. We knew we were gonna miss him. But to me, it's a huge personnel thing. And no one on the roster, you guys talked about Ochai in the first section. He's not big enough to do that, or at least he hasn't developed into that kind of defender yet. And no one on the roster, to me, really fits that mold of who's going to be that 3-and-D lockdown wing.
Yeah, I personally just don't think this roster at its core will be able to defend at an elite level, which is why, like, you're kind of happy with having picks in the draft. Like, there's some guys in this class that you look at that could potentially be game changers defensively. And to me, Scotty, when I talk about, like, having that vocal leadership that we didn't have with Pascal, with Fred, with OG, I think Scotty will grow into that. He's still, what, 22 years old? Like, when you think about it, like, he's had his moments where, whether it's not running back on defense, we went through all that kind of stuff. To me, it's like, the kid's 22 years old, and the fact that he, the off-ball defense, the rim protection that he provided, I'm not worried. I think he will be able to sort of just, like, create, like, be able to push the message out that whether it's the coaching staff is saying to him or just, like, be able to be that vocal leader that you need, that's going to, like make up the mistakes for others, you know? So I just think, obviously, we kind of talked about it. What was the last – once you trade OG, you didn't have losing Kawhi. We were searching for a small forward for years for this team, right?
Oh, yeah.
We had Damari Carroll minutes, you know?
Hey.
But it's like – so
relax.
It's like, look, so, and I think too, it's like Christian Coloco was like, I think he was supposed to be a defensive anchor.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So losing him was a big, big thing. So.
And that that's like unforeseen. Like, how are you supposed to, you know, I mean, like it's a medical condition.
And even he turns into Jonte Porter, who great game last night, but another offense first guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jonte could guard a little bit.
Jonte impresses me in a lot of ways, but compared to Coloco, he's just not.
For sure.
He doesn't project to be that kind of defender.
He blocks shots, but he's not a rim protector in that same way, which is a weird kind of distinction. And that's not to say that it can't be effective. I thought Jonte was very effective defensively last night. But, it is kind of weird because, to your point, the starting lineup as is right now with four of the five pretty much penciled in, with Jakob, with Scotty, with RJ, with Quigley. I think for RJ and Quigley, they can take some more ownership of improving that on their fronts as well, right? Like, it changes IQ's whole entire game if he goes from being a guy who the Raptors have to hide with their matchups versus being a guy who can hold his own. I'm not expecting him to, like, hold his own and then be a great help defender elsewhere as well. Maybe he can do that as well, but for me, he needs to get to that step where he can really guard his own. And then with RJ, I'm curious to see what you guys think about RJ defensively. Because to me, I feel like it doesn't seem like there's anything physically that he can't do to guard at least his own position. But sometimes you do see the lapses, because how much those two guys improve defensively will dictate how much that fifth starter will need to do defensively and who that kind of player is. So do you see more growth in IQ and RJ and how they guard?
I do. I think for me, RJ a lot of times just lapses. It's like he's not paying attention. And New York, like, he was considered one of their best defenders, even though he probably shouldn't have been, right?
I mean, there was a when they put the Heat, he did a considerable amount of time guarding Jimmy.
Yeah. So if you're asking him to be like, you have Scotty guarding Jakob guarding the anchor, you have asking him to be like guarding the third best player on the roster or in lineups, I think he could do it. And he's still young. It's just, I think he has the tools. That's when we look at it, he has the tools for it. It's just, can he get in? Can he just, like, walk into the scouting report and pay attention to that? And the same thing with IQ. I think for him, it's like, I think he's an above-average defender when he tries, you know? But it's like, at this point in the season, it's, like, very hard to evaluate guys and be like, can this guy defend? Because this season's washed at this point, right? So it's like, I'm not when they're losing games.
What do you want
I'm
me
like,
to do, man? The show's 2 hours, man.
But, like, I'm not.
I gotta say something.
So when RJ gets beat in a pick and roll or, like, gets beat by Zion, I'm not, like, hanging my head like this guy can't defend, you know, because I'm like, this season is done.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, both of them have room to grow. Both of them right now are probably at least average defenders in the NBA. But to me, what I was really talking about earlier and what I think any good defense needs is someone who you can throw at a Luka Doncic, a Kawhi Leonard, and make them a bit uncomfortable. And And RJ, as toolsy as he is, I don't think he's ever going to develop into that guy.
Right.
And quickly, just because of his size, is always going to be a mismatch to those type of players. And again, you can't have three guys in your starting lineup who Luka Doncic will look at in the eye and say, this is no problem. Like
first off, Luka Doncic looks at 99% of the league and says this is no problem.
But we watched that game together, the Dallas game, and he looked at the Raptors and made a game within a game of that. Like, he was just playing with himself, throwing the craziest passes. He was unbothered.
The one where he drove middle and then threw the over-the-shoulder pass into disgusting. The corner to Tim Hardaway.
He was completely unbothered, and we've seen OG Anunoby on Luka Doncic, and he doesn't play that way.
Right.
And so we need that kind of player. So.
We did see the Darko solution for a lot of this was like, all right, Scotty will do it. And Scotty was the answer of like, okay, well, we don't have something. Scotty will do it. You know what I mean? And I just think it will tire him out just a little bit too much. Like, you know what I mean? If you really want him to take that next step and carry so much for you offensively as well, then it's difficult. Plus, it's one thing. It's like, okay, you know what? Scotty's going to guard on ball, but someone else is going to be able to help and make up for his help defense. You also need his help defense. How are you supposed to ask the man to guard on ball and off ball?
I'd rather him playing help.
Exactly. So that's where you need a 3-and-D type to come in. And who knows? I mean, you know, it will be difficult to find those guys. I'm sure the whole league is looking for those guys. Is there anybody on the roster that can kind of conceivably slide into those slots right now? Or is it just a hard no for you?
I think it's Ochai. Like, I think he has real problems offensively and defensively. He's just okay right now, but I think when you look at his potential and the way that they're playing him right now, he gets the number one matchup every night. I think they're trying to develop him into that kind of guy. He's a little bit different of a defender. He's smaller. He's more better at the point of attack on guards rather than these big wings. But if I'm looking at the roster, Ochai is the only one I see as maybe 2 years from now, this guy could be a pretty good 3-and-D guy.
Yeah, and the first time when I saw him, I'm like, you remind me of OG, just like the jackness, you know?
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Smaller legs.
I mean,
yeah. Everyone.
OG got the Meg Thee Stallion.
But I miss the days when like Donovan Mitchell would come to Toronto and it's like, maybe OG was taking care of that. He's coming here and he's dropping.
Think about the old days.
The old days.
Well, the thing with OG is he walked into the league like ready to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing. It's like, it's hard for me to see like guys developing in that direction. It's not to say guys can't improve or on the margins, get more attuned. You play the league more and more. You understand your matchups better. But, like, yeah, I mean, they're giving Ochai that chance right now. And I think that it doesn't even matter as much to me. The fact that, like, last night he went 0-for-3, that's not as important as what you can do defensively. But the Raptors do need to find that. I mean, you're even seeing, like, they're going to McDaniels in some of these games to do that. Yeah. I had a question that I put in here to set you guys up.
I abstain.
Your least favorite thing about Jalen McDaniels?
I abstain.
Hey.
How could you abstain, bro?
Honestly, never interacted with him.
Okay.
So I can't. I'm probably an amazing person,
I don't know if we need to do all that. I just meant like on the court. Like
on the court, yeah. I think it's the tunnel vision. It's kind of like sort of insane to me.
Yeah, like why? Like
it's just like you watch him, I'm like, I don't know what, you know, that one guy on the roster when he gets the ball for the first time, you just don't know what he's going to do with it.
Yeah.
And like, you're like, will he give it back to me? Like, he's that type of guy. He's like, he gets the ball for the first time. And it's this might be his last time touching the basketball. So he's about to do something crazy with it, you know? And I don't blame him. It's like, you gotta eat. You gotta take those opportunities.
But he's got a guaranteed contract for next year. What do you mean you gotta eat?
Hey, but sometimes
the food is coming.
But I'll be honest. Sometimes I look at his contract and I'm like, hey, man, Delano's making half of that. And he's doing in Portland. I'm like, hey.
Well, you could explain why Delano's not here.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I'll say, because I don't want to take the easy route out. Like him and Bruce Brown, to me, have the same problem. I'll group them in, and it's easier to hate that way. Is like
this man said, it's easier to hate when it's 2-for-1 combo.
No, but both of those guys make selfish decisions with the ball.
Yeah.
And to be quite frank, they're not good enough to.
Yeah.
Like they're not Scottie Barnes. And you're, especially when you have these injuries and new guys coming in, like you need to keep moving the ball. You need to keep trusting your teammates. And both of those guys just make bad decisions. It's one too many dribbles in the paint with five hands reaching in and a turnover when it could have just been a pass. And that's why Ochai to me is like for all his faults,
he at least knows himself.
He knows his role exactly.
Yeah. He's like, ah, this one's not for me.
And I'm fine with that, man. Yeah. Like when you have Kelly Olynyk on the floor, IQ on the floor, like give them the ball.
Yeah.
Let them make the decisions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's not easy to find these type of players. The Raptors did try to cycle through a lot of them, you know, and ironically, we are now short that 1-6-9 type of like small forward that can really come in and do it. But I mean, historically, when you look at it, like you mentioned earlier, like the Raptors have tried to address this issue in the past. And that's why they had felt so secure for so long with like OG finally getting drafted and taking that spot and being solid for like 6-7 years with it. In between, they had Kawhi as well. So these are the hardest spots to really fill, you know? So that's tough. Pivoting off the Raptors, I guess. So defensively, yeah, they got to figure it out. You know, I think they can change the personnel to accommodate certain areas, but ultimately the personnel is what it is. And I think that that is interesting, by the way. If you can't get better defensively around the other four, then it's going to be harder for Grady to enter that starting five. Because I think a lot of people really want to just push him and advance him in that way. Speaking of a former Raptor that struggled with defense. All right, this is one I'm throwing out of the left field for you. But we're having the discussion planning for the show. Did you guys watch DeMar DeRozan last night? The Bulls versus the Pacers?
Just the end and same overtime.
Yeah. That's all you need to see, honestly.
Yeah.
The NBA puts together these really nice videos of like wild finishes, and it's just like the most important parts. The NBA even knows they're like, yo, you only need to watch the last 5 minutes. That's why we clipped this for you. Yeah. Put on YouTube. But you gotta watch that because DeMar had an amazing game, 46 points, but he also had like a fall away on the baseline to force overtime in the first. Pascal had an insane block on Kobe White. Hopefully Kobe White's okay because he also fell on Kobe White, but it was a great block, super clean, just a tough landing. But DeMar DeRozan ends up finishing and winning that game for them, finishing with 46 points. We were discussing this game on upstairs, and the question was posed to us by producer Mark Boffo, shouts to him. Is DeMar DeRozan a future Hall of Famer for you? Right now, just a quick yes or no from Oren and Lieben here.
Yes, because USA stuff too.
Okay.
He has a gold medal.
I'm biased. He's like, I told people in his first year as a rookie, I think he's going to be an all-star. So
you told people his first year as a rookie he's going to be an all-star?
I bet people.
Lieben was 4 years old.
And yo, that's crazy.
And they still owe me money. Uh-huh. I bet people that he's going to be all-star.
Say their names.
Yeah, I don't want to call them out. Okay, but hey, they still haven't paid me back. But yes, for me.
Will you take a Bellissimo's gift card?
I will.
Okay.
It was only like $10 that we bet. But
yeah. That's two meals at Bellissimo's.
It is.
yeah, okay, good. I'm happy you guys both said yes, because to me I was like, I got to think about it a little bit. Not to be a hater. I just got to think about it a little bit. But then I looked up the NBA's like all-time scoring like list of you know, whatever. He's 32nd in all-time scoring. He just passed Larry Bird in NBA scoring.
I think he's like 3K from like Kevin Garnett. And he's like 20th or something like that.
It's good that you mentioned that because on this list, he's 32nd. So there's 31 guys above him on the NBA scoring list. Everybody is already in the Hall of Fame who's above him. The guys who aren't are guys who will become in the Hall of Fame, like LeBron, KD, Carmelo, Vince Carter, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Stephen Curry. I think we can all agree those guys are all going to the Hall of Fame, 100%. Right? DeMar is still only 34, one of the healthiest players in the league, right? He might miss like 5-6 games in a season, but that's been the consistency in his game. Keeps himself in great shape, all that kind of stuff. At two more seasons, so basically he's scoring about 1,800 points a year so far. If he does this for two more seasons, DeMar would be at essentially 27,000 points, and he would be like 14th above like Oscar and like Dominique in all-time scoring. If he does this for three more years, he would be midway through he'd be at 28,580 points roughly. It will put him in the top 10 just above Carmelo. Wow. If DeMar did this for three more years. And again, it's kind of unbelievable to me because I think if you look back at it, did we have two Hall of Famers on the Raptors roster? Because I think we would all have Kyle as a Hall of Famer as well. It helps us his case that he's got the ring as well. But
to me, you don't need the ring, though, because, like, no offense to the Basketball Hall of Fame, but anybody walks into that nowadays, right?
That's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. Like, the Hall of Fame is too easy to get into. So these guys deserve it with what the current criteria is. But if I were to make a Hall of Fame, I think the criteria would be a little, you know, more tight.
And he holds, like, so many Raptors records. Like you
mentioned, he's the top of everything.
Won at the Olympics, won gold, I think, with the World Cup. Like, he's won a lot. I know, like, we nitpick and be like, can he perform in the playoffs? Mm-hmm. Like, the Basketball Hall of Fame's not asking you that. They're asking you for a playoff riser.
Yeah,
that's six-time All-Star. Right. Like, yeah,
so I guess I just didn't fully appreciate the fact that DeMar could conceivably, like, not even ridiculous that he finished his career as a top 10 all-time scorer.
That's
like,
pretty wild.
Total points.
But we do have to also take into account all the scoring stuff you mentioned earlier with the league he is in right now is just like in this golden age of scoring.
But here's the thing, though. DeMar's been doing this with ones and twos. It's not like he spammed threes.
That's a good point.
DeMar's a classic ones and twos type of player.
Ones and twos guy. Yeah. I mean, the pace matters. Like, it does matter. The way the game has changed. But it's a good point. Like, he does not rely on the three the same extent as a lot of these guys in today's game.
Yeah. Shouts to DeMar DeRozan, man. I'm just happy for him. I guess I was happy for Pascal with that block, too. Again, if you haven't seen it, that was an incredible block. But, you know, I don't know. There's something about DeMar right now where he's, like, so undeniable in the clutch, especially recently. And the Bulls are becoming more competitive.
Yeah.
I mean, I was also watching that game, and low-key, I was like, damn, how many of these losses have Pascal had against DeMar? Because there's a lot of times where, like, Pascal does things to, like, put himself in, usually the Raptors in the past, and now the Pacers now. Like, put him in position to beat DeMar, and then DeMar would just, you know, do his thing in the fourth quarter. We've seen it in Toronto quite a bit, even against Toronto. But shouts to DeMar DeRozan. I guess the Raptors defense is bad. It's time to talk kind of basketball. We're going to take that break. Been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, William Luke. Sorry, there's a Derek has played some. It's Rage Against the Machine, he tells me. Yeah. So I was trying to do my best screamo. You guys have heard me do karaoke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're crazy.
Yeah. It's my hidden talent.
I have videos.
You know what? I have videos about you too, so let's not release them, okay? We're mutually assured destruction here.
Yeah.
Me, Lee Ban, Orin, you know. Does this feel more like the karaoke booth, or does this feel more like the 590 booth that we typically sit at in the games? Like, what's the vibe that we're going for today?
More of a game booth vibe, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Less tame, though. The game booths are crazy.
Yeah, they're high energy.
Yeah. you. Okay, everyone else is chilling, and then you've lost your mind. I mean,
they're pretty chill, I find, until, like, the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Now give people the behind the scenes. What is it like in the 590 booth, guys?
Hey, man, a lot of, I wouldn't say name calling, but that's outrageous. Not name calling, but but what happens in the booth stays in the booth, you know. So
exactly.
Except the like Raptors executive booth is like
right next
two feet away, and they definitely hear like half of the stuff. But mostly like yelling at the refs from like very far is the biggest thing.
The amount of times I've like close the door just in case like they're hearing that. I'm like, I'd rather not for your sake.
There's a lot of poutine being eaten in there.
Yeah, of course.
There's a lot of poutine.
Chinese food usually.
Yeah, shouts to Shanghai 360. You know, still waiting on that season-long sponsorship.
Damn, you haven't got it yet?
Nah. I don't think they got it like that. No offense.
I'm in there just fasting, just like.
Yeah. Do you bring your own lunch to the Raptor games?
No, I don't.
Bro, I've seen you do
this. It's dinner, and I've done it like twice. Yeah, I ate a pork chop in my hand.
This guy had a pork chop bigger than his head at the game, I swear.
Yesterday I had the worst public shawarma eating experience of my life. It went all over my shoes. It was terrible. Goodness. But anyways.
What happened, man?
Nah, we don't need to get into it. I told you, like, it was just the wettest shawarma. I ate it on a park bench because it was beautiful outside. But I looked down and I realized it had just dripped all over these white Nikes I got and my pants. And I had to go to an interview after that. I was interviewing someone for the book. By the way, I'm writing a book about Canada basketball and the growth of Canadian basketball. Golden Generation. I got to plug it when I'm on the show.
Yes.
2025. Follow me on Twitter for updates.
You know, we're going to talk about you all the time about that book.
No, it's going to be great. So just had to plug that. But
yeah, for sure.
Spilled a lot of shawarma, for sure.
But the shawarma should not be wet, okay?
It should not.
It was a saucy, sauced-up shawarma.
Yeah, apparently.
Because I was in Etobicoke, and I read best shawarma in town. I was like, I got to try it.
Was it Saison?
Kebab House or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kebab House.
Nice. Yeah.
You know why restaurants aren't named like that?
Yeah.
Nah, it was...
They don't put it in the title.
It was actually pretty good.
Yeah. No, seriously, that's always a beef I've had. Okay. Putting aside that, you know, you're writing that book about Canada basketball, and this is taking up most of your time, right?
Sure.
Wanted to talk about Canada basketball a little bit, pivot, you know, to another subject, thank goodness. We do get to see Both Jordy Fernandez come to town next week with the Sacramento Kings. He's been an assistant there. He's the head coach of the men's team. And we will see Shea next Friday. I know that's a game that we will not be missing.
Of course not.
Yeah. And Lou. Shout out to Lou.
And Lou Dort. You're right. Right. Shout out to Lou Dort as well. And it got me thinking a little bit, just like, okay, I'm obviously watching this Raptors for this season, but I'm also watching for a second team. You know what I mean? How's Canada going to do? And we saw Jamal. We saw what he did to the Raptors in that fourth quarter. We saw what he did to Kelly in that fourth quarter, that one where Kelly got him stuck, and he's like, nah, step through, finger roll with my left, and it still went in. It got me really excited thinking about what the top eight for Canada's roster could be, best-case scenario, going into the Olympics. So I would love to hear from both of you. Maybe, Lee, man, you go first on who your top eight is right now for the Olympics.
Yeah, let's start off with eight. I'm more struggling with the 7-8.
Okay.
Actually, maybe not 7-8. I don't think I'm really struggling with this. Just, I'm going with what I think will be the core.
All right.
And it's basically the same guys that were there last year.
Okay, so give me the list.
And I'm just adding one. Hopefully, so it's going to be Shea, obviously. Mm. Jamal, if he's healthy.
That's your added one.
Yeah, that's my added one.
Okay.
Dylan Brooks, Lou Dort, RJ Barrett,
yep.
Dwight Powell,
yep.
Kelly Olynyk, and Nikhil Alexander Walker.
That's your six.
I had the same eight.
Same eight. So,
there's no Andrew Wiggins on either of your list.
No.
No, you asked, I mean, you asked, like, who are the best eight this season. Andrew Wiggins has not been better than Nikhil Alexander or Lou Dort this season, like, straight up for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah, I don't know if you want to get into, like, who you would start.
That's the thing, too. It's like, cause for me, when it comes to Wiggins, it's like, will you accept the bench role?
Yeah.
Coming to play?
That's interesting.
Because a year ago or a year or two ago, I don't think we were having this discussion saying Wiggins like, hey, will come off the bench.
You want to play?
But what they did at the World Cup, will you let Dylan Brooks start? Will you? And I think.
Bro, there's no way I'm benching Dylan Brooks.
Exactly.
No way.
And RJ Barrett, I don't want to see him off the bench.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe you could go back and forth with him, but I think you go, to me, it's actually, if Jamal's playing, I think you go Shea, Jamal, when we're talking starters, that's your backcourt. I think Lou Dort, Dwight Powell, Kelly Olynyk. But to me, Kelly Olynyk's like you can, like what they did at the World Cup, he was like in and out. It's like defensive concerns, right? So, and I think Lou Dort or Dylan Brooks can play the four or five.
Mm.
Not the four or five, but like Dwight Powell will be the five.
Yeah.
But the four.
Yeah. So, real quick on Andrew Wiggins, I'll just say this. Like, Canada basketball asked for this 3-year commitment. Andrew Wiggins wasn't willing to do it. The only way I think he was going to make this summer's team is if he was one of the best players in the league this season.
And it's like undeniable. Just, you cannot have him.
Exactly. Yeah. And the fact that he's dropped off so hard, plus the fact that he hasn't been around the last two summers, to me, I just don't see it happening. Like Jamal Murray, not only is he leveling up, I think he's really one of the best guards in the league. He's been there last two summers. He's been in those training camps. He knows the system. He knows Jordy. Mm-hmm. He knows the guys.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew hasn't been there. So that's like a big difference on top of their play.
Yeah.
In terms of starters, I went Shea, Jamal, RJ, Dylan, and Dwight.
Mm.
Just like you said, Kelly came off the bench a little bit just because defensive matchup.
You do need more defense.
Both him and Dwight need a guard fives. So I think those were some of the problems you saw in that Spain game when Kelly started coming off the bench for Lou. So, yeah, like obviously you're small and your rebounding hurts when you put Brooks at the four. But I think you put the most talent out there, you put your five best guys out there, and that's who they are, in my opinion.
Mm.
And then you shuffle in the second halves and stuff, matchup dependent. If you need to get bigger, get Kelly in there, et cetera.
Because I think that's the one thing where it's like, okay, Andrew's not playing well, but he plays, he gives a premium like skill set, a need that like bigger, obviously he's super athletic. Mm-hmm. We've seen him rebound at a very high level in certain moments in the finals, for example. But, as you mentioned, man, the season's not been good, so I get it either way. No Nembhard in either rotations?
He's there. To me, he's like...
Is there a conversation,
he's
Nembhard? Added,
he's like my 9-10, like that.
Okay.
He's in that mix.
Yeah.
And I think Canada should really consider him. He wants to play, and he's willing to accept whatever role. He's that type of player, right? Mm. So imagine, to me, I'd love to see like a off the bench him and Nikhil.
That'd be
a fun combo, I think.
Right.
Yeah, no, I agree. He was right on the bubble for me. I think it'd be great to have him. He said he wanted to play. And, like, you think about Shea and Jamal, both those guys could go on long playoff runs. Olympics in July, it's not the same break we had for the World Cup. So those exhibition games and stuff, like, you want another point guard there.
For sure.
You want another good point guard there. Whether, you know, I hope there's no injuries, but even just to keep those guys fresh for the games that matter, you really want a guy like Andrew Nembhard there. But, yeah, I think he's the ninth man. And I also think guys like Chris Boucher, Trey Lyles, Tristan Thompson, I think they're also on the bubble in terms of giving you that skill set.
Right.
Big guys, rebounders, three-point shooters that you can use. Those are also not core guys, but guys I would consider bringing in.
I was going to say, too, is, like, my big concern will likely be, and I think everyone's probably, like, is wondering, will Jamal, like, actually be there?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Say they do make a long playoff run again, they get to the finals. Mm-hmm. NBA Finals starts, I think, June 6th, I believe, and camp is supposed to start. Say that series goes for 2 weeks or whatever
it
is.
I think the earliest camp could start is, like, June 27th.
Exactly. Like, so he's going to get, what, a week or two off right before? And he wasn't able to play the past summer, and he had, like, a whole month off, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, like, are you, like, I personally, if I'm Jamal, I'm going for the championship, right? To me, it's like, yeah, that Olympic stuff is going to come. But if you're healthy
but
enough,
bro,
I don't
is
want
it going
to
come?
It.
Because we've seen that, like, you can't take this thing for granted. Like, it's literally been 24 years since Canada was, the men's side was in the Olympics.
Yeah.
So there's no guarantee, and he's in the prime of his career. It's like, you kind of, I mean, it's unfortunate because I also do think that the Nuggets will repeat, and I think that Jamal is going to play a huge part, and he's going to be super banged up and, you know, giving everything.
Yeah.
But it's right there.
Yeah.
You know?
It'll be tough. Just depends how his body is, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. And it depends on what guys value. Like, I don't want to, again, going to plug my book, and I don't want to get into ahead. Jamal's head, but, like,
you
look at the history
the show,
of the program.
I wish I had prehistoric like sitting yeah, properly on the set.
You look at the history of the men's program, and, yeah, like, guys are always injured. This has always been, like, a huge problem with NBA guys, but the guys who play are the guys who value that more than they value rest, and it's more they value it more than they value even, like, having a good start to their next NBA season. The guys who play are the ones who, like, really want to be there for their country and really understand the importance of an Olympic Games and what it means to represent Canada there. So, like, I don't know if Jamal's going to be injured or if he's going to be healthy at that time, and he'll have so many different things to weigh. It's really hard. But again, it's really, like, what do you want to prioritize? Is this Canada thing so meaningful to you that you're willing to go into it banged up and all that stuff and even enter the next NBA season a little less fresh than you would otherwise? We'll see. And that's just not just like a Jamal thing. That goes for so many of these guys. And that's something that when you look at the Serbias, the Germanys of the world,
it's not even a question.
They have a culture. Yeah. Exactly. It's not a question.
You just do it. Like Spain, like Pau Gasol was playing for them like late 30s. Like, yeah, I'm there. I got you. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
So Canada needs to get to that point, and
but I think we're close. That's the thing. I think we're getting so much closer to that because you got these quotes from Dylan Brooks, and this came out I think last week, and Dylan Brooks said, "Quote: When you come and play for your country, it's all about the pride. It's not about the money. It's not about anything else except pride of representing your country." And he's talking about these other players that potentially could join them that weren't with them in the World Cup. He said, "Quote: They played with Team Canada before, and we need to get better." And he went on to say that, quote, "I said this after we won the bronze, and it doesn't matter. We got to re-up. We got to get better. So add Jamal, add Nembhard, add Wiggins. That's going to make our team better. Those guys are selfless players."
That gets you excited, man.
No, but I can imagine Dylan Brooks having these conversations directly one-on-one with guys, too. You know what I mean?
I think that happens. When Dwight Powell was in town, I was asking him, and he was like, a lot of the times, like, when he sees guys on the road visiting NBA teams, when he sees the Canadians, he's like, "You coming this summer?" Like, he's asking them that. Like,
good. That's culture. Though.
Yeah, that's actually culture. Yeah. That's why he's one of the team captains, right? So, it's cool though. It's like the fact that those guys are just texting each other, being like, "You playing this?" Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like I get goosebumps when I think about that and like what the team could look like this summer.
For sure, for sure. I think the other underrated part of this is that after Kelly got his extension, the entire seven-man, at least NBA roster rotation, because there's only seven NBA players and the rest of them were other players who just weren't in the league at the current moment. I don't want to be rude to them. They're also made a big contribution as well. But those seven NBA players who played at the World Cup for Canada, all seven of them, after Kelly got his extension, have guaranteed contracts for this upcoming season. So it's not like any of them walking into free agency right now.
Yeah.
And, I think that definitely certainly would help. Yeah.
Definitely helps. And not only that, just like to add to that, you look at that eight-man group we just mentioned. Other than Dwight Powell, they're all having arguably career years. Like, these guys are really playing well, and that's
right. There's not
matters.
A single guy in that group that's not contributing.
Like, Lu Dort is having an incredible offensive season. This guy
he really
was,
fixed his shot.
He like. Fixed his shot. He's one of the most dependable clutch time guys. He makes right decisions.
Shout out Noah Analytics.
Nikhil Alexander Walker is playing a huge role now that he's starting a lot of games now that Karl Anthony Towns is down. Like, he's really thriving. And Kelly Olynyk, we see, like, man, Kelly has Kelly ever been better offensively? Like, really, this guy is incredible.
The only thing he wasn't really doing was hitting threes at a high clip, and then he's starting to hit threes again.
But also, like, we talk about warm-ups. Yeah. That guy does not miss in warm-ups.
Oh, yeah.
When I watch him, and he's shooting, like, 40-something percent from three. Like, he doesn't take a lot. That's the thing. I want him to take more is the big thing, too, right?
Yeah, but, you know, he doesn't need to spam threes because a lot of the offense is...
Somebody else's.
It's actually a little bit similar to, you know, just international basketball in general, where you see the bigs use a lot as a high post. Like, that just happens way more. It's, like, super common in international basketball versus, like, in the league, it's become more and more popular. And honestly, because of the talent, right? Because Jokic has come in and done it. Because Embiid's come in and done it. Because Sabonis has come in and done it. You know what I mean? So
talking about those guys, that's my biggest concern when it comes to basketball.
Right.
Who will guard Embiid? Who will guard Jokic? Who will guard Rudy
Stop
Gobert?
Not Embiid's not playing. Stop
you don't
this
think he's
right
playing?
Now. No way.
You don't? Why would he even register or, like, sign up for...
Bro, he did the whole thing.
He can't stay healthy, though.
Yo,
like,
how did he do...
Okay, my fault.
Yeah,
he's,
I mean.
He's like, definitely not blessed with 100%.
He really did the My Decision. You know?
I completely forgot
my next chapter, and it was with nationality. That was wild.
I completely forgot that he's injured, but Rudy Gobert, I'm not really worried about, but, like, Jonas Valanciunas, those guys, you know, Sabonis, you know, it's like...
You could put him in pick and roll, you know what I mean?
Like, you can.
Try to, like, run him off the floor a little bit, play small.
But that...
But I hear you, though. It's a concession. Like, it really is. Is there nobody coming up? Like, what about my half-Chinese brother, Zach Edey?
Hey, that's the thing, though. He's going to be... The draft is what? I think the 26th, 27th, around that time. Like, it's, I would say, very unlikely, unless he has something already predetermined that he's going to be playing. But I think going into your... being drafted, it's impossible for you to play.
Right.
That summer.
Yeah, he'll be an interesting
one. It's basically
one.
Never happened, right?
Yeah. I think it's happened because USA used to have guys that were, like, playing college, like...
And then go right... Okay.
And they're, like, I think Anthony Davis was a case. I'm not too sure.
Right.
But, like, they'd get college guys, right?
Okay.
So it has to be something maybe in place.
But AD was number one pick. It's a guarantee.
Like,
you don't have no guarantee if you're wherever
Zach
Edey's going to get drafted.
Exactly. We don't know. That's the thing, right?
That's just interesting. Okay, you scratch him off the table. I guess you said Tristan Thompson earlier. Like, is he not banned? Because
But that's the thing.
Deposit?
Olympics are so serious with that kind of stuff, no?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So. I don't know. I don't know if he'll be eligible to play. I know he wants to. Zach Edey, we did talk to him when he was in Toronto with that Alabama game, and he said he was planning on playing. I think it's possible in terms of, like, if he's a first-round pick and he has a guaranteed contract, he could probably make it happen. But even then, I don't know if they take him on that 12-man roster. Like, we saw he had real struggles in the World Cup.
Yeah.
But, like, of course, what you guys are saying, like, the big man position is really where they're weak. Chris Boucher is interesting to me.
But he's never really even been, like, has he not been invited to these? Like,
what's
the deal?
See that happening.
Has he not been invited, or he just hasn't gone? Like,
he's been invited.
He's expressed interest whenever, like, I've talked to him, or, like, I think any other reporter,
he's
expressed interest.
He's gotten the invite, and he's expressed interest. Then why hasn't he done it?
Chris had, obviously, no contract certainty until 2 years ago when he got that long-term deal. And then last two summers, he basically told me he was dealing with personal stuff and just didn't have time for the national team. Said he wanted to play this year. But... yeah, we'll see. And yeah, that's the thing. Even him, even Tristan, those guys come with their flaws, right? And there's no perfect solution to guarding a Nikola Jokic on the team, or really even, I don't think, coming down the pipeline.
That's the one tough thing. Is like, you just wish there was one, like, really, really solid. Doesn't even have to be exceptional. I mean, like, man, Ken Burch available?
I'm about to say Ken Burch. What you doing up there in Europe?
Representing We the North.
But here's the thing. I've said it on the show, and I'll say it again. Like, Dwight Powell gets so underrated in these discussions.
Okay,
he's by far our best option as a post defender, as a pick-and-roll defender. And I think he gets overlooked a lot, and I think he will be the starting center. And, yeah, that's not going to be where the strength of the team is, but if you have Jamal and Shea in the backcourt, you can play in those games.
I just wish I saw more from, like, Powell this season, because he's fallen out the rotation with Dallas. Yeah, so,
I mean, Dallas also drafted a new center. Yeah. You know what I mean? Then they traded for another center. Yeah. So, like, he's, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, I guess Kyle Alexander. Shouts to Kyle Alexander. Got some size. Got some shot blocking. Well, I mean, obviously we know the strength of the team is in the guards. And it's time now for the spicy take of the day. That's probably surprises on you guys. Brought to you by New Chunky Spicy Soup. Are you ready to get fired up? Yeah, my spicy take is, honestly, it don't matter how much the bigs are, because Canada's going to have the best backcourt at the Olympics if Jamal Murray comes through. It's going to be the best backcourt of the entire Olympics.
Better than U.S.?
Here's the thing. U.S.
Steph Curry? I agree.
U.S. bring old guys.
Okay.
Old. You know what I mean?
No, I agree.
You know, they're older. I mean, like, when you can I'll stack resumes, I'm not trying to disrespect Steph Curry or, like, Dame or whoever wants to come. They're older, though. We talking about players in their prime right now. Canada's going to have the best one. Shea and Jamal, if Jamal comes through, that's going to be tough. I don't even know how they're going to share the ball, quite frankly, but it won't matter.
It won't matter.
It won't matter.
It'll look beautiful.
That's my spicy take.
Well, I think I agree. I don't think it's that spicy. I think
they
play off each other so well because Jamal is such a good off-ball player playing with Jokic. You could make an argument for the States because I'm just thinking now, if Steph and Booker play, people would probably take that backcourt, and I wouldn't blame them if they did. But
it's competition for sure. They're number two. There's no shame in being number two.
Yeah. And if I was to poke holes in it, I would say Shea is the best defender of those four.
Yeah. Booker really likes the challenge, but
yeah,
I think Shea is more disruptive, gets more steals.
Right. So just and then there's the experience factor as well. Mm. Canada has that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
All right. Well,
good take.
It was a take.
A good take.
I forgot that until Ahmed told me, it was like, we haven't done it. And I was like, all right, I'll just come up with one on the spot. But I'm just really like excited to watch that in the summertime because I think it's just a really good time for the program in general. You think Jordy's going to get a chance to become an NBA head coach soon? Will he be in the next round of interviews? Like, what do you think the coaching Canada's experience is going to do for him professionally, at least here?
I think he's on the cusp. So that's been my concern. It's like, will that impact Canada basketball? I don't think it will.
I mean, but we had Michael Bartlett on about a month ago.
Yeah.
Canada basketball CEO. And he was like, you know what? That's not going to affect it. Like, it's not going to be a situation like when Nick got hired in Philadelphia. It was like, I might not have time for this. Sorry, I got to go. Yeah. Right. That was assured. But, you know, you can always assure things and maybe situations actually do change when it happens. But I choose to believe him, at least in that moment. But, I mean, you know, what'd you guys make of him as a coach? Because I feel like the coolest thing with watching the World Cup and the FIBA coverage and everything is, like, those cameras into the timeout huddles. And you get to, like, actually hear everything they're saying. The camera's right there. You can see what he's drawing up. And you can see the sort of level of engagement and the personality that he came with. And I was just really impressed. Like, I was fired up watching at home at 3 a.m. blinking because it was in Manila, all that kind of stuff. But what do you guys make of Jordy in general?
Yeah, I was impressed with him too. I think sometimes it is hard to distill how hard are these guys playing for Jordy and how hard are they playing because they're wearing Canada on their chest
with
a bunch of friends who they grew up with. Like, this means something more than the NBA does to a lot of these guys. So in that sense, it is a little hard to distill how much the head coach is doing. But like you said, he kept it simple. He organized them really well. He asked Shea in that one huddle that we got some inside to, like, do you want an ISO or do you want the ghost screen, right? Mm-hmm. And that was when Dylan's man came and ghost screened it. So
Is that when he dropped Mikal Bridges?
No, it was in the Spain game when he dropped the other guy, hit a step back too, and iced the game. So Jordy, he did everything he could to prove he was a good coach in that tournament, and that's why I looked at stuff like what happened with the Bucks, and it frustrates me because the same five head coaches get the same jobs over and over again in the NBA.
Yeah.
There's no creativity.
Talk about it.
Mm.
And if you want to, like, be brave but still get a guy who has experience, Jordy is sitting right there. Yeah. He proved that he can be a head coach and that he can be a good one, and yet these teams like the Bucks are afraid to take a chance on a guy like that, and they go to Doc Rivers, who's a sure thing, but not necessarily his upside maybe isn't that high.
That's your chunky spicy soup take right there.
Yeah.
Is that spicy? Let's that get Doc Jordy Rivers isn't that coach. Great of a coach?
Like, I actually think he's doing okay with the book so far. But in any case, we're going to run out of time for that discussion. Oren, real quickly, when's your book coming out?
Fall of 2025, The Golden Generation. Follow me on Twitter at Oren Weisfeld for updates. Already interviewed a bunch of exciting
people. Bro, I said quick, man.
Like, it's crazy. Right. I love it.
All right, there it is.
Yeah, Lee Van, appreciate you. He ate all your shine, so I can't catch Lee Van at a Bellissimo's near you. But that does it for us today. I've been your host, Will. You've been listening to the Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's New Chunky Spicy Soup. Time to get fired up. Big thanks to our guests today, Garrett Temple, Oren Weisfeld, Lee Van Osmond. We will be back tomorrow.